Before I read the second reading, I wanted to mention what a joy it is to have the choir back. There's been a number of people who have said that having the choir here is like having a concert every Sunday morning. And they certainly sound wonderful. Well, our gospel reading today is from my favorite gospel, the Gospel of Luke. This is Luke 15, verses 3 to 6. So Jesus told them this parable. Which one of you, having 100 sheep and losing one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders and rejoices. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost." May God bless the reading of this word. And may we read, or in my case read, in your case hear, a word for us today. Well, this parable of the lost sheep is found in Matthew and Mark and in Luke. And that is a very clear indication that, the best indication that we have, that this is an authentic teaching of Jesus. And it goes with a number of other narratives in the Gospels. There's that narrative of the prodigal son who is lost and then found. There's the coin, which is another parable. The coin is lost and then found again. And there is this recurring theme of something being lost and then found. Well, in the commentaries that I read about our scripture today, there seems to be consensus that this particular parable about the lost sheep was directed at the early church. And the point of the parable was that if you're in a church and somebody, and back then it was small churches, house churches, and you notice that somebody's not there, well then by all means leave the 99 behind and go and look for that one who is missing, because you don't know what may have happened. They may have been captured by Roman guards. They may be sick. They might have lost a loved one and they're in grief. But I think the point of the parable is not just to go out and get this person and bring them back into the fold. I don't think that's the primary point. I think the primary point is that each person, each individual, each unique, very unique individual with a very particular backstory, each person is loved in their particularity, and each person is written on the palm of God's hand. It says in the Bible that every single one of our hairs is counted. In other words, we are precious to God. And so that was the point to the early church, that the people in this community are precious. So we have to go the extra distance to find them and find out what's wrong. Sit down next to them. Give them our undivided attention. Ask them, what's going on with you? What's wrong? We notice that you're not there. We miss you. And you know, that to me is the beauty of smaller churches. I've served smaller churches in my ministry, and it's intentional. When I graduated from seminary, I said to myself, I will never serve a church that's so big that I don't know everybody's name within the first year. And that's true. You know, I have correspondence with a friend of mine in Texas. He's in Austin. And on any given Sunday, there are 2,000 people that show up for his church. Now, that's a totally different animal. And in all honesty, I'm not interested. That's not what I signed up for. That's not what I want. What I want is more of a community where people know each other, where those relationships are valued above anything else. Well, many people are enamored with big. You know, if you have a big following in social media, Twitter and Facebook, that's a big deal. If you're part of a big crowd, or you go to the stadium and it's just packed, people love that. You know, just they love all those people. But as I look deeply into the Gospels, I realize that that's not what Jesus was about. More often than not, when I read in the Gospels, what I find is that Jesus is weaving himself through a crowd of 999 to get to that one person who needs to be healed. Jesus is bobbing and weaving in and out of these people and gently nudging them aside so he can get to that one person. His focus is not the crowd. His focus is that one person who needs him in a particular way. And that's the beauty of the Gospels to me, is that focus on the one person. And oftentimes as we're reading the Gospels, we think, why didn't Jesus go to Jerusalem and start a big church? He could have done that. And then he could have gotten a marketing wizard to, maximize the number of people that come in, I mean, that's what we would have expected, right? I mean, he had these gifts. He could heal people. He would draw so many people. What a missed opportunity. But so often, when we look in the Gospels, where is Jesus? He's in the byways, the small towns, the backwater. And he's with a few people. Usually a disciple or two and a few other people gathered. But that was his priority, was these small groups, these individuals. That's where his focus was. Well, I remember my first church with a lot of fondness. I started in that church 17 years ago in Montana. And one church had 100 members, and I served them at 9 a.m. They had a 9 a.m. service. The other church had 150 members, and I served them at 11 a.m. service. And there was 14 miles in between. Sometimes because of the snow, I didn't get there quite in time. So I told them, just start singing hymns. I'll get there. But one of the things I remember in that in those small towns is the Baptist minister in town asked me out to coffee. It was about my second week there. And we had a nice conversation. But the thing that I remember most, and it kind of stays in my mind, that he said to me, he said, Amos, he said, don't count people. Make people count. And I don't know if that was a cliche. I don't know if it's something that he had heard in the various Baptist gatherings that he was in. But I really wish that more churches had that emphasis, that motto. Don't count people. Make people count. And another thing I remember in my first church in Montana is there was a rancher who was in one of the churches, and he said to me, he said, Amos, I've been to those bigger churches in Billings. And he said, they feel to me like a spectator sport. You're just supposed to sit there and watch. And the symphony's going on, and you just sit there. But he said, this church is different, he said. This church isn't like a symphony or a spectator sport. This church is like a square dance. You got to get in there and dance yourself. So that's one of the reasons I like smaller churches. And that's one of the things I love about Casas Adobes, is there's so many people who are, they're charged up about something, and there's something that they're passionate about, and they make it happen, and they get things going, and that's a great thing. Well, as I look back on the church that I grew up in, a church called St. George's Church in Arlington, Virginia. And it was an Episcopalian church, because that's how I grew up, Episcopalian. I've been in the United Church of Christ now for 20 years, but before that I was Episcopalian. Anyway, it's St. George's Church. When I think back on that church and I remember my childhood church, the first thing that comes into my mind when I recall St. George's is not the big gatherings on Sunday morning. It's not the events where just loads of people showed up and it made the local paper. That's not what I remember. What I remember about St. George's Church is three women, and that is Barbara Poole, Anita Cooper, and Barbara, Anita, Carol, thank you, Carol Weiler. And so those are the three people that I remember. And the reason I remember them is those are the three women who were part of my mother's prayer group. And those three people meant everything to my mother. Especially when my grandpa, Amos, that's my mom's dad, he came down with Parkinson's. And so my mom felt called to care for him. So she went to Georgia and cared for my grandpa. And that was one of the hardest things in her whole life, is caring for my grandpa. She came back so drained. And it was her prayer group that kept her going. It was the prayer group that listened to her, you know, to speak about this. It's her prayer group that gave her a shoulder to cry on. And that prayer group, it meant so much during that time. And to this very day, those three women, Anita, Carol, and Barbara, are my mother's very best friends. And even though she lives in Northern California now, they still communicate. They exchange cards. They exchange phone calls. They have such a deep connection. And so at St. George's Church, I don't think, when I look back at it, I don't think about those 99 people in the pews. I don't think about that. I think about Anita and Carol and Barbara. Because oftentimes it's not the 99, but in this case, the three, or in some cases, the one, that makes all the difference. And when I talk to people about, you know, why did you become a part of this church? Usually the answer that I will get is that there's one person who just stands out, and they're so special to me, and that's the reason I'm connected to this church. So there may be lots of people in the sanctuary on Sunday, but what really matters is those one or two really significant connections, those relationships. That's what matters the most. And the Bible has a preference for smallness. So it's no surprise that oftentimes Jesus didn't really care about the crowd. He cared about that one individual person who is bowed. He's bowing his head right now in a Humvee in Afghanistan, or that one person who is right now in some kind of situation where she has been in the hospital for 10 days, she doesn't know if she's going to get out. Or that one man in his lonely apartment, and he knows that he's alone, he knows that he feels this deep loneliness, and he starts to think to himself, you know, I keep bumping into that 60-year-old woman down the hall when I take the elevator, and she is pretty cute. Maybe I'll ask her out. But so often, it's not about the big crowd. It's about that one person. It's that one person who's sitting in their prison cell right now, and they have 6 months left before they're out of prison, and they're thinking about when they get out, how are they going to make it right? How are they going to start in a different way now? Those are the people that I think matter most to God. And so this parable about the 99 sheep, it tells us something about God that we often forget, and that is that just a few people are where God's focus is. And in the Bible, when 5,000 people were fed in the wilderness, it wasn't because there was a donor with really deep pockets who made this big donation, and they had a banquet, and they had this amazing caterer. That's not why those 5,000 people were fed. They were fed because a young boy came forward who had two loaves and a few fish. And sometimes that's all it takes to just transform everything. You know, just a few things that are given with the right intention. And that's reiterated throughout the Bible. The woman and her two coins that she gives into the temple treasury. And Jesus says her two coins mattered more than all these other abundant gifts that were given out of these people's abundance, because this was all she had to live on. And I also think of that tiny pearl. You know, that tiny pearl of great price. It wasn't some big palace of great price. It was a tiny little pearl that you could almost miss, and you would just go right past it. But that pearl is worth everything. And in order to get that pearl, you sell everything else. And I like how throughout the Gospels, Jesus does not say, if 50 or more are gathered together in my name, I'm there. He doesn't say that. He says, when two or three are gathered in my name, I am present. So there is this this intentional focus on smallness. Even Deuteronomy chapter 7, it says, you, O tribe of Israel, I did not choose you because you were impressive or large or had chariots or horses. That's not why I chose you. I chose you because my heart is reaching out to you. And I know in my heart, this is God speaking in Deuteronomy, I know in my heart that you can be my people and I can be your God. It's not about being impressive or being big. That's not what it's about for God. And I also love how in Genesis, Abraham is arguing with God and says, if there are 10 righteous people in this city, will you spare this city from disaster? And finally, God relents and says, okay, if there are 10 righteous people, I will relent. It's not, are there 100 people? Are there 200 people? Are there 10? All it takes is 10. And that is the beauty, I think, of the smaller churches and of the ministry that Jesus had, is that just one or two really significant relationships can make all the difference. Because it's not about quantity, it's about quality. And when I think back on my own ministry and the years and the churches that I serve, I don't see the buildings in my mind. I don't see the large gatherings. What I do see is faces. I see David Lawera. I see Helen Hufford. I see Teresa Hopkins. I see these people who cherished people, and you could just tell, because when you're around them, they would give you their undivided attention. And they had so much love to give, not to just scatter it, but just a few people that just shined because they had so much energy and so much compassion. So that is what I remember when I think back. So now to bring this message full circle, when I think about the ministry of Jesus, the thing that comes first into my mind is these huge crowds of 999. And what's Jesus doing? Jesus is maneuvering through the crowd, gently nudging people aside so that he can get to that one person and attend to that one person's needs. And when I think about my childhood church where I grew up, St. George's, I don't think about the huge gatherings on Sunday. That's not what stays in my mind. What stays forever implanted in my mind are Anita and Barbara and Carol. Those three people that meant the world and still mean the world to my mother. And when I think about Casa Sedobis UCC, the first thing that comes in my mind is not the beautiful grounds. They are beautiful. But the first thing that comes into my mind are the relationships that people have here, the bonds, the human bonds, the marriages. Those really close connections, that is where the vitality is. And if we prioritize that, everything else will unfold naturally. The vitality of the church will increase naturally. The missions of the church will increase naturally. But it starts by prioritizing individual people, giving one another the time of day, getting to know one another, asking the important questions. Because that's what Jesus was about. He was about intimacy. He was about compassion. He was about discipleship. He was about relationships. That's what mattered the most to Jesus, not the big crowd. And so now I have something for you to think about, and that is, you are the 99 right now. Where is that one sheep? Where is that one person that you need to reach out to? Where is that person who's not here, but who is close to your heart? What is a word that you can give to this person at precisely the right moment to make a difference? Amen.